Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
On the last episode of Guilt.
Look, I've said before, and I say that all the time, nothing makes sense. There's nothing to anchor yourself on. So I've been involved in quite a few homicide investigations, and there's always facts that you link things around. But in this case, the facts are often contradictory or they don't make sense. You know, it sounds like something from a Sunday horrors movie back in the day. But it was annealing solution, which is just to loosen rust. It's been described to me by scientists as you could swim in it and get a suntan, you know. So, and Jim would know that.
It's violence that may disturb some people.
Today we can officially announce that New Zealand's deal has cracked the code.
On the 21st of June 2004, scientist Jim Donnelly vanished from his work at the Glenbrook Steel.
From Brevity Studios in New Zealand, I'm Ryan Wolfe, and this is Guilt.
There was nothing in the early days to indicate that we were looking for somebody who had been any misadventure.
Hands and knees, and you don't know what you're going to find. It started off as a joke and then it got rather scary.
I just asked if anybody out there has any information that can help me put this victim home.
In the last episode, I spoke to Inspector Dave Glossop, who has been the man tasked with making sense of this case for the last 12 years. We also covered the outline of the police timeline of events in a very matter-of-fact way. But as with any case, the actual actions themselves only make up half of the story. To get the full picture, we need to get to the reasons behind those actions, the emotion that we can't read off a police report. So in this episode, we're going to get to the heart of this case and this podcast. We're going to meet Jim's wife, Tracy Donnelly, and discover who Jim really was as a man, husband, and father. And of course, we're also going to hear from Tracy the tragic and bizarre series of events that took place over the course of the final couple weeks before Jim's disappearance. In many ways, Tracy holds all the keys when it comes to Jim's behavior over this time. And due to the importance and length of her interview, it's going to be split over two episodes. In this first episode, we're going to learn about Jim, the husband, and Jim, the family man. We're going to go over these details in depth, because in this particular case, I think it's vital we have a firm understanding of who Jim was as a person, so that we may hopefully get a better insight into his actions to come. I've done so many interviews now that I don't normally get nervous. But as I drove on the motorway to meet Tracy, I'll admit I felt a few butterflies. I'd spoken to Tracy on the phone, and she came across as someone that's no nonsense. She's been in the trenches of this case for almost 20 years, and apart from a select few police, she knows the case better than anyone. And as of today, I'm more or less coming in blind. Aside from the same things I've seen repeated in the press over the years, yet I already feel a personal pressure to try and break this case after all this time. This adds to the nerves, but I love it. That sense of the unknown. So this is basically the first step in season two of Guilt. Going to meet Tracy Donnelly, which is Jim's wife, and yeah, this is the first interview of it all. So it all starts here. Yeah, I'm actually a little bit nervous, if I'm going to be honest. You know, it's pretty hard. I mean, Jim he's never been found, so they don't have that closure. So I'm not quite sure what to expect in terms of, you know, how Tracy's going to be, and yeah, it's going to be an interesting interview anyway. And I'm really interested to know what Tracy thinks happened, and just to learn more about Jim and the man he was. And yeah, so it all starts here. I pull up to Tracy's home in an affluent area of Auckland. It's a beautiful two stories with fantastic views.
Okay.
Well, she's cool. Got someone here, obviously.
Cool house.
Oh, that might be her son or something. Oh, there we go.
Hello, how are you?
Sadly, Tracy has been in and out of hospital over recent weeks as her mother is not well. They've recently swapped homes as her mother is no longer able to use the stairs. We find a nice sunny room on the top floor where we take a seat.
All right, where would you like to?
I was just going to do the front room.
Yeah, it's nice and right in here. Oops.
Right. Yeah. Oh, this is actually my parents' house.
Oh, okay.
So my mum's living in my house because it's one story.
Tracy is in her 50s now. It's been 18 years since Jim's disappearance. As we sit, I almost get the feeling that this is just another day in the office for her. Groundhog Day. Over the years, she's given dozens and dozens of interviews, been involved in numerous TV specials and a bunch of single episode podcasts, all in an attempt to try and keep Jim's case alive, on the hope that someone might come forward with that crucial new piece of evidence. But to this day, no person has ever come forward. The case remains as much a mystery as the day Jim went missing. And despite the strong front she puts forward, I can see all those years of disappointment in her eyes. And I only hope that by the end of this, I can change that and hopefully bring some resolution, whatever that might be. But for now, I ask her to take me right back to the beginning, where it all began.
Yeah, we'll just start at the beginning, and I suppose if you don't mind, we could go back and tell me about how you met Jim, and right back at the start.
Okay, so I met him at a party.
Yep.
Hayley's Comet was in the sky at the time.
Yep.
And it was just a party I went to with a girlfriend.
Yep.
I didn't know anybody there. It was a friend of hers that was having the party. And so we went in fancy dresses because I was doing costumes at the stage for Milford Little Theatre. So we decided to dress up because I had all the costumes at home. So I was wearing tails, I think, and my girlfriend was wearing a captain's, captain's for ship type. So we just rocked on up to this party and had a few drinks, got chatting to a few of the local inhabitants of the flat, and then met Jim and his friend Paul, and things just went from there. It was sort of he was quite interesting to talk to, and Yeah, I found out later it had quite a few dreams because his, he had a lisp as a child, so he went to speech lessons.
At this point, Tracy's partner Rob briefly decided to start the food processor, so I apologise for the background noise. It doesn't last long, but I won't apologise for how delicious the scones and cream were after the interview.
Yeah.
So when he had a few drinks, it just clicked in.
Oh, right.
Speaking proper English. So anyway, yeah, so we had a good night, and then he asked for my number, and I wrote it on his hand in lipstick. And thought, oh, maybe I'll hear from him, maybe I'll...
Yeah.
Because that's all we had, you know, to know pens or anything. It was just, yeah, so bright red lipstick on his hand. And, yeah, then he rang me, I think it was 3 or 4 days later. So,
yeah.
And unbeknown to me, I didn't remember this, but he told me later, he said every time he rang me to go out, I was doing something.
Yeah.
And then one of his brothers said to him, one night, oh, give her another call. She'll be, you know,
yeah.
You just never know. And I was free. So.
He might have thought you were ghosting him or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that wasn't a thing back then.
There's probably a different word for it then.
Yeah. So, so we went out and, yeah, so rest is history.
So how old were you at that time, the time of the party?
21.
Oh, 21.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was 24.
Yeah.
Because just after that, he had his 25th, and I took him out to dinner at the that French restaurant in town. It's pretty cool.
Oh, so you took him out?
Yeah, I took him out. Yes.
Oh, very modern.
Yeah. So that was because you're like 25. Oh, what do you do for your for a 25th? So yeah, so we went out, had a beautiful dinner, and so that wasn't long after because we met just before Anzac Day.
Okay. What was it sort of that what was Jim's personality, his character like?
Oh, she's lovely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, our first date, you know, he was very considerate. Yeah. And he went, you know, to white or red wine. He didn't know, so he bought one of each. Just in case. And he opened the door of the car for me, those sorts of things. And when he first came to pick me up, I said to my mother, I says, oh, you'll like this one. So she looked down over the balcony and she goes, oh, okay.
Did he come from was his family sort of quite a proper kind of open the door type thing? No, that was just Jim.
One of his sister-in-laws called him Gentleman Jim. So it was just who he was, and he was just lovely.
Yeah.
In the mid-1990s, Tracy and Jim were head over heels. They soon moved in together before Jim decided he really needed to go back to university.
And then from there, how long before when did you guys eventually get married?
Well, we moved in together first, and then he went back to university, decided that he really needed to finish his degree. So we were flatting, they'll put him through university.
Yeah.
And then because at that stage he weren't paying for university.
Yeah.
So it was not as hard. And also he was sort of the apprenticeship down at the mill. So they were supporting him and he was working in the holidays. To a degree. And I was working full time. And so he did his metallurgical degree, engineering degree. We got married when I was about 25, 26, something like that. And that's when we moved to Manukau and bought our first house and renovated that. And the day he finished his exams, my father was on had the lumber for the garage delivered.
Yeah.
And Jim thought he was going to have a holiday. no.
Yeah.
Building a garage.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. So he was at the mill from that early stage.
Yes. When I met him, he'd just started down at the mill and I just started over there in New Zealand. So we both had just sort of gone into those companies.
Yeah.
And we were with those companies right through our relationship.
When Jim went missing in June 2004, he had been working at the mill for almost 20 years. and Tracy at Air New Zealand, where she's worked as a travel consultant for almost the same period of time. This highlights the fact that the life Jim and Tracy had created was apparently a settled one. When the average person moves job every 3 years, it's certainly a bit of an anomaly, and this is what makes Jim's behaviour in the days before his disappearance all the more troubling. I asked Tracy about Jim's earlier years, before they met, and how he ended up in his role at NZ Steel.
He'd done a bit of travel overseas with another friend. He'd spent, I think it was probably a year overseas.
Oh, right, okay.
So he did a lot of travelling. Yep. And then when he came, because he went to university and then it didn't sort of all come together because he's probably too young sometimes when you go in. And so he sort of left that, then went travelling. And then when he came back, when I met him, he'd just started at the steel mill doing a metallurgical cadet role. And so he was going to night school and doing a diploma. And then it wasn't until sort of later on to our relationship that decision was made that he'd go back and do his degree.
Oh, okay.
So
it was actually doing that, the metallurgy at the mill, that kind of made him decide to go in that direction in the end.
Well, because when he applied to them, he was applying sort of for doing engineering, and they decided that they wanted him as a metallurgical engineer rather than just... I don't know, sort of a general engineer.
Right, yeah, they saw something like, this guy's pretty switched on, maybe we should use him.
Yeah, so he started in the labs and, sort of just testing the metal and the makeup of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to go into the university with them when they were just pulling tensiles.
Yeah.
So to the break point. So you just put on this big, huge... microscope machine. It's amazing that the images that you see, it was just like it's a small city that comes up with just, and they're just pulling it until it breaks and just sort of seeing the break, as far as I know.
Yeah, testing strength.
That's a simple version.
Yeah, whatever they do.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So then at that point you started a family?
That was a wee bit further down the track. We bought the boat first.
Oh, okay. Well, your first kid. Well, Jim's first child, I mean.
Because he's always been into sailing. His brother had a trailer sailor that he started on. And then he used to do racing and the rum races and the...
Yeah. would you get out there as well?
I did. I did there for a while. I joined... joined the boys a couple of times.
Yeah.
I wasn't... not... Didn't do it every weekend, but every so often I'd do it, go out on the boat. It was a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Jim really, really, really loved it because it's like, so we ended up buying a boat. We were sort of wanting to have a family, but it wasn't kind of working out. So we decided, all right, well, we'll buy a boat. And so we did. We got a 28-foot, it was a Nova 28, and we had that for quite some time. And
it's quite decent, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was sort of like was go away for weekends, Jim just loved sailing. He'd even just go out by himself just to sail around, but it was just amazing when you get out and you see all the phosphorescence in the water at night, it is really different. We did a bit of that, and we still had the boat when the children came along because we took them out a few times, but that was just hard work.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, two little ones on the boat. Liam really, really enjoyed it because they'd go out to the islands and then sort of do a bit of beach combing along the shore and pick up treasures and things like that. And Siobhan was quite young at that time. So, we just... ended up selling the boat because it was just got too hard, just with the maintenance, time, working two jobs, two children.
You realise you've got this asset sitting there doing nothing.
Oh, it's a hole in the water.
Yeah.
You keep pouring more money and more money into it. But, we had it. It was fun, we went out and we, just round in the harbour, sort of, I think the furthest we went up to was Cowell.
Yeah. And, oh, it's beautiful there, though.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, went up there and and swimming off the boat, and yeah, it was great. Yes. You know, lovely lifestyle. Oh, but yeah,
Jim was obviously, he was a competent sailor. He must have been pretty good.
Yes. He didn't like to stay in one spot too long. You know, sort of more up and relax. He just wanted to keep sailing.
It's well known that Jim dearly loved sailing, and was more than competent. We're going to look at this in greater detail in upcoming episodes, as it's a key aspect to one of the most commonly believed theories of Jim's disappearance. But the other passion of Jim's was his kids. At the time of Jim's disappearance, they had two children, Liam and Siobhan, aged 7 and 5 respectively.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah, so they were 5 and 7
yeah.
at the time. So Siobhan had just started school. So she started because she turned 5 in September. So, yeah, so it was through her first year at school.
Yeah,
and Liam obviously was 2 years ahead of her.
What was Jim like as a dad? Was
I love, yeah, hands on. He was great. He, nothing was too much trouble, you know, if they... You know, Liam wanted to make carrot stew, so they found a recipe that did the job because he wanted carrot stew. And he built rockets, so, you know, because he wanted a rocket, so he built a rocket. Siobhan was, she says her memory was that he played doll's houses with her and nobody else would. And, they loved their dad. Dad was great.
Yeah.
Hands-on.
So he wasn't a backseat parent.
No, bath times, nappies, anything. He was all part of it.
Yeah.
Because with Liam, I was working shifts, so he was, you know, sort of like he'd be home when I wasn't home, so he was.
So he sort of had to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he loved it. Because, like, when Liam was born, he was in what they call Skaboo, because he had just a bit of breathing issues. And so, a little bit known to me because I was upstairs because I was recovering from a seizure. And he drove home after visiting us. And then he sat at home and thought, oh, Liam's all by himself. So he drove all the way back to the hospital and stayed the night with him.
Well, really?
Yeah.
Wow. So he was caring.
Oh, yeah. He was very besotted with his children. He said they're the best thing that ever happened to him.
Yeah.
And why hadn't we done it earlier?
Jim's infatuation with his children is important in this case. The prevailing theory by police and most people is that Jim has tragically somehow taken his own life. And while loving your children doesn't necessarily mean a person would be immune to such an act, it does provide motive to live. He had young children who he adored and likewise adored him. It's very difficult to imagine Jim would choose to leave them behind. Another aspect of Jim's life I was very curious about was Jim's social circle. You can often learn a lot about a person through their friends.
Yeah.
When you met Jim, what sort of his friend circle and stuff, like what were his friends like? I mean, you know, what was sort of his social circle when you... And even at the time you were sort of together?
Well, when I first met Jim, I thought he was an only child. Little did I know until later that, no, he's one of eight. Because just at the beginning...
What made you think an only child?
Well, I never heard about any of them. I was just Yeah, until we got invited to a 21st for one of his nieces, who's around about the same age as us. That was when I first met the family, and it was like, oh my God.
So he didn't mention it until you didn't ask because he didn't know, I suppose.
Well, no, because that was, so early on, so I'm just trying to think how, it was in the first 6 months. Yeah, no, it didn't really mention it. He did, a couple of times he said he was just going around to see his parents because he was flashing and I was living at home. And that was what I sort of heard. And then, so they sort of came into our lives slowly, but at the time I just really thought he was an only child.
And what was Jim like with his family? And did he get along with his family?
Oh, yeah. It's just, he was just doing his own thing. And, once we sort of became, a couple, as in we weren't just dating, we were sort of more into that serious mode, then I think we started sort of introduced into the family, and then we had a lot to do with all of them, because he sailed with his oldest brother and the next one down, they both, because they were the sort of crew. So those, and then he was very close to his brother, who's one up from him, Keith. He was, so we spent a lot of time over the years with Keith, and then his sisters, one of them lives in Christchurch, so we sort of went down to visit her, and then another sister, she lived locally, so he was quite close to her as well, and then the other one lives in Tokoroa, and we visited when we were travelling up and down the country, so they were all quite a big part of our lives.
Okay.
His friends, you've met Stephen and Debbie. I met them on their wedding day.
Oh.
Yeah, because they were living in Melbourne.
Yeah.
So they came over and Jim was best man. And he flew down earlier and then I flew down. So I met all the friends at the wedding. But that was a bit of fun. And we've just been in contact friends ever since.
Yeah. In terms of he wasn't someone with like a big sort of like social group all the time, going to pubs and stuff that kind of thing. Yeah.
No, yeah.
More about his own family. And
yeah, no, he had some really good friends. And they weren't people that he worked with. He did have acquaintances with work when we went to a couple of the work parties that his friends were putting on, but it wasn't a big part of his life. It was more his friends that he'd met as he was growing up, but it became sort of the big, that those were the friend group. They're the ones we spent a lot of time with, and my friends, and so it was, there was a lot of social stuff, potluck dinners, sorts of things, fancy dress. Yeah, he was quite happy to do fancy dress.
Yeah.
He didn't, I grew up, while I was growing up, I did the nightclubs and stuff like that, and really enjoyed those with dancing and stuff like that. It wasn't his scene, so I'd never met him in a nightclub, but I met him at a party.
Jim was born into a large family, the youngest of eight, three girls and five boys. While Jim was close with his family, it gives us a bit of an insight into the slightly introverted nature of his character that Tracy believed he was an only child for the first 6 months of their relationship. Jim was clearly a man that was focused on what he was doing, and if you don't ask the question, you don't get the answer. I asked Tracy to tell me about Jim working at the mill and how he fitted in with the team.
Moving forward tell me about the mill and what Jim would sort of tell you about his job at the mill and how much he did enjoy it. And
Because when he first started down there, he's moved around quite a few different departments, and from the outside looking in, he was kind of a square peg trying to fit into a round hole with the personality types down there, because he was super intelligent to a point where the social skills weren't as easy for him. You know, he got on really well with people, but he did find it difficult just engaging. I mean, I understand it because I'm a wee bit like that myself, until he kind of relaxed into it. Or there was a common, something that you had in common that you could talk, you know, sailing or something like that. You know, he would overanalyze conversations. So to a point, he'd make himself uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then that would, yeah, it would just make the whole thing uncomfortable. So, yeah. I've got sort of friends of my sister's, same. This guy is sort of on a different plane. Jim and him could have a really good conversation. And the rest of us are sitting there going, what? You know, it's just on that different level.
You know when you meet a person and you just click, conversation flows, they're on your level. Perhaps for some of you, this is a common, almost daily occurrence. For others, this may not be so simple. Jim fit into this latter category. Jim was not the kind of person that would stand beside the water cooler shooting shit over the weekend's events. He had a relatively narrow field of interests, of which he was very passionate. And if you weren't knowledgeable in these areas, it was difficult for him to engage. We probably all know a person like this, someone that unnecessarily overthinks every moment of a social encounter, and as a result, it can cause them to withdraw from all but their very closest friends that they feel comfortable with. As you can likely imagine, a steel mill is going to be a workplace where someone with these kinds of traits may struggle to fit in.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I mean, everyone sort of has that. Sometimes you know you meet someone and you're on that level and you can talk and you just click like that.
Yeah.
And especially, obviously, Jim was very smart, so there probably weren't heaps of people on that exact level with him.
No, you know, he could, that's what, you know, him and Stephen could converse on that level, and this other guy and him and...
what was his name?
Oh, I can't remember. But yeah, he was another one, super intelligent and very dysfunctional within society.
Yeah.
So not that it, because... I mean, I thought, you know, socially he was fine, but just sometimes he just probably underestimated himself and his...
Because you eventually obviously knew and loved Jim, do you think sometimes like maybe you were seeing him as Jim, but sometimes if you stepped out and you looked in, were you like, oh, it might be a bit odd for people? So a place like a mill where people, they might think he's weird, or maybe could he speak in a way that might actually like annoy people?
Well, he's just on a different, humour-wise, probably. Yeah. You know, just.
Well, what's a sense of humour?
Oh, it was, a bit off the wall sometimes, and he'd find something really funny and he'd just laugh at it, and then someone would sort of look at him and go, it was just, it's tricky to explain. But because I just say, oh, no, you're fine, you're it was good. I didn't find anything, because he'd sort of analyzed
you'd get home from somewhere then, and then he'd be going over.
Yeah, and I'd be going, no, I didn't see anything. it was fine, or yeah, that was a bit weird. But I don't think I'm probably overthinking what people thought of him. But he was a very genuine, caring type of person that just didn't fit the norm. Mm. But, whether the norm is normal, I'm just,
So he might go into a situation then later. Would it sort of make him sometimes pull back a little bit because he's worried? Yeah. He's like, oh, I'm going to say something and they're going to take it the wrong way, so I'll say nothing.
Possibly, yeah.
And so at the mill, so if he's moving around different departments, is that because they're sort of moving around, or he's had enough there? Or they're just not fitting,
he just, well, no, he just wanted to go and try something else. Yep. And so, yeah, he just was like with me at Air New Zealand, you know, you just couldn't stay in one place for the whole time. Yep. It's interesting to move around, learn new things and learn different things about how things are operating. Yep. And you build your network of people that you can talk to when you come up against problems. So it's a good thing to do. So, yeah, it wasn't a negative thing. It was just that he did find in the last few years that he just felt he was not achieving what he wanted to achieve.
That's what I was going to say. Did he feel like people would... Was he getting the respect that he felt he deserved, sort of thing?
Talking to some of the managers, from what they say, yes. But from how he felt like some of his ideas and things were taken out of his control, and somebody else took the kudos or the took the because of his social skills,
yeah, you know. They're like, well, we can walk over him, sort of thing.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, he'd put things together, or at one stage he was putting things in place to actually remove his job. So, well, you know, he just went, well, if we put this in place and this in place, you actually don't need me. So, yeah. But it was more efficient. So
he's
that's
very pragmatic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. So and then you just go, I'll move on, do something else. But, you know, through the years he was there, you always had the redundancy, the restructure. Every company was doing restructures and everybody was worried about what would happen. So, yeah, but he just wanted to do the job.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's...
How much would he bring his work life home with him, if you know what I mean?
Well, he'd never take any leave from work because he always had something on the go. So it was very hard to get him away from work. And if he did take leave, he'd 9 times out of 10 end up back down at work. Yeah. We'd have to go away somewhere. So
that couldn't happen.
Yeah. And also sick leave, he never took sick leave. And so he was, yeah, well, when he actually went missing, he had stacks of sick leave.
Yeah.
You know, because he never took it.
Right.
So yeah. Even though he was a death's door, he'd still be down there doing his job because that's what he was paid to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Had he ever thought about moving on somewhere else or anything like that?
Yeah. 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 He'd been for a few interviews.
Oh, okay.
Sort of probably 18 months, 2 years before. But that was probably me that didn't really want to move.
Okay, yeah.
So I was hesitant to move because I just didn't, out of my comfort zone. Boy, did I go out of my comfort zone later. But yeah, I was, yeah, that was probably a lot to do with me that we didn't move.
Yeah.
And yeah, hindsight.
While we've spent a lot of time in this episode focusing on Jim's personality and relationships, I want to be clear, Jim wasn't some kind of social leper. He was a doting father, a loving husband, and a hard worker. But he certainly was that guy that we all know that can be kind, caring, and thoughtful, but just struggles to make meaningful connections with people outside their immediate circle of friends and family. You'll hear more in upcoming episodes, but I wanted to make it clear that Jim was a square peg trying to fit into a round hole at NZ Steel. Sometimes people like Jim can rub people the wrong way. So it begs the question, was Jim's inability to fit into the culture at the mill somehow connected to his disappearance? Did Jim rub someone the wrong way? Or did Jim perhaps, in an effort to try and fit in, get himself involved with people or activities that he otherwise wouldn't? This is certainly something I'm going to be investigating further in upcoming episodes. But for now, I'm going to conclude this episode, and next time, we're going to take a deep dive with Tracy into the bizarre string of events that played out in the days and weeks leading up to Jim's disappearance, and hopefully start piecing together some pieces of this puzzle. Guilt is written, produced, and edited by me, Ryan Wolf. The title track is Nuclear Conception by Alison Winter. For further photos and video related to this episode, you can find a companion post on my Instagram, RyanWolfNZ, or our Facebook page, Brevity Studios NZ. For ad-free listening and bonus content, you can subscribe for the price of a coffee on Apple Plus under our Brevity Studios channel. You can also find further information on our website, theguiltpodcast.com. If you have any information related to the disappearance of Jim Donnelly or the subsequent search at the mill, you can contact us anonymously at brevitystudiosnz@gmail.com. On the next episode of Guilt.
Yeah, so it must have been April that I was away then. Because I came back and the weekend, it was Mother's Day weekend, because we went out looking for cars and we went out to see his mother and he dropped the camera and it was, had a bit of a meltdown. But he was just, I never, between then and when he went missing, I never actually found out what actually happened with that car accident. And I was thinking, oh my God, he thinks he's going to get a beating. Was there an initiation of something that's this? And I'm like, what the hell? And I was thinking, oh my God. So I rang his sister in Christchurch and I said, hold on, this is what's going on. What do you think? And she sort of said, well, he obviously needs to go to this meeting.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.